I'm Alex Marlowe, editor-in-chief of Breitbart News and author of the best-selling book Breaking the News, and this is the Breitbart News Daily Podcast. On today's broadcast, we begin with election results from Tuesday night's primaries. Of course, we do a fair bit of discussion of the Pennsylvania races, both the Senate race, which is too close to call as we're recording this, and the governor's race on the Republican side. But we also get into other interesting, noteworthy races across the country, especially Madison Cawthorn getting unseated in North Carolina. And then we dive into the regular headlines on immigration and baby formula and more Twitter deal drama, some new evidence of Black Lives Matter grifting, and Joe Biden's incredibly divisive speech in Buffalo, where he pretty much blames all of you for the one crazy racist who shot up a supermarket. Our guest today is Senator Rand Paul, who just so happened to have won his Senate primary yesterday as we're recording this. And I ask him about sending money to Ukraine. I ask him about if there's any oversight of your tax dollars going to Ukraine to fund their border war with Russia, the state of the coronavirus and our response, and how to stop would-be mass shooters if we can do it. And he thinks there's probably some things we can do. As a spoiler to what is to come. So all that and much more in the interview. He is a true intellectual and a true constitutionalist, both of which tend to make for great interviews. So let's get into it. Top, very interesting developments, first and foremost, with the Pennsylvania Senate race, which was on my radar as the most interesting race in the country until this point in the primary, and some somewhat surprising results, I would say. The Senate primary right now is too close to call between Dr. Oz and Dave McCormick, which is interesting. And I will tell you, we had good communication from the McCormick campaign throughout. We had reasonably good communication from the Barnett campaign throughout at Breitbart. We've had no communication from the Oz campaign, which would be very interesting if Oz is able to pull this out. But I'll tell you what the McCormick campaign analysis is right now, even though Dr. Oz has a slim lead. As we are having this conversation, it is a it is a very small lead indeed. It is, as of this time, Dr. Oz is up 2,672 votes with 94% counted, so which is a margin of 0.2%. But the McCormick campaign says that of the 6% remaining, there is outstanding votes in at least one pro-McCormick county in western Pennsylvania that they anticipate they will make up some ground there. And then there is a lot of mail-in vote that is yet to be counted. And McCormick was dominating that category, and they think there's enough outstanding that they're convinced they will be able to take the lead. But then there will be a recount, because definitely within the margin of recount for that state. Kathy Barnett did a pretty amazing job overall at 25%, but is still losing to the 31% that Dr. Oz and Dave McCormick had. It's interesting that McCormick has hung in there considering his total lack of national media attention. Got almost zero. He got a fair bit from Breitbart, and that's basically it. His other national outlets did not treat his candidacy as interesting, and that makes some sense considering his persona is not as interesting as putting a Dr. Oz or a Kathy Barnett in the Senate. That said, he ran obviously a good enough campaign to put himself right there at the very end, even if Dr. Oz edges him in the end. But the McCormick campaign says they're very confident, and I have not, as I said, spoken to the Oz campaign. On the Democrat side, it was a blowout for John Fetterman, who is the pro wrestler type who went to Harvard, but portrays himself as a blue-collar guy. He portrays himself as a normal guy, even though he is really radical and says stuff like abortion is sacred, literally, direct quote. But he will be the nominee for Democrats, and that'll be a super ridiculously interesting race, whoever the Republican nominee is. beating Connor Lamb. Connor Lamb is one of these guys who's running for everything all the time. And he did not do well in this race. Got blown out. Doubled up. And then some. Other key races that are out there was the Republican gubernatorial race. And the Republican gubernatorial race did not go well, in my viewpoint, because Doug Mastriano won the Republican nomination, which is unfortunate. I think he's not a strong general election candidate. I think he was he's going to make the race all about January the 6th. As I've noted over and over again on the show, he was incredibly insulting to a young female Breitbart reporter for no good reason. So we'll see how he does. Of course, I refer him to any sort of Democrat who's in there. A guy named Josh Shapiro got the nominee for the Democrat side. He's a strong candidate, it appears. And he is going to go up against Mastriano. And I'm rooting for Mastriano to win because Mastriano's not a Democrat, but not a strong candidate there. And so that could be interesting because it's going to be a red wave, but there could be these notable exceptions. The other biggest race on the Senate side was Ted Budd won in North Carolina. We'll try to have him on. He's been on before. He's on Boyle's show pretty much every week on Saturday. He's like a regular. Is he on payroll at this point? He had a blowout over some establishment back candidates, including a guy named Pat McCrory. And it's interesting to see these races where you don't know 100%. We knew that Budd had the upper hand. But he more than doubled up his next best opponent, Pat McCrory, who was backed by the establishment. A very anti-establishment guy, Ted Budd, and ran obviously a great race in North Carolina. Won almost every county, I think all but one, all but Charlotte. And the county where Charlotte's in. What county is that? It's called Mecklenburg County. And I should know that. I've been in this game long enough to know that. But so a big win for him. And other than that, where he lost by a tiny, tiny, tiny margin, I think less than 1,000 votes to Pat McCrory, who was the runner-up. He went every other county. So good for him. We'll talk to him down the road, but he'll be a strong candidate, I think, in the general election. The other noteworthy one, I think, of all the other races that is a must report at the top of the show, is this is, unfortunately for some of you, unfortunately for others of you, this could be the end of the Madison Cawthorn era in the American politics. Now, Madison Cawthorn was the youngest, or is currently the youngest, Republican in the Congress, and one of the youngest, period, maybe the youngest, period, of either party. He is good-looking, young, boisterous guy who also happens to be in a wheelchair. And he makes very emphatic proclamations on behalf of MAGA, but I have reason to believe that a lot of it's sort of an act. To be honest, if you go and play back our interview with him when he was on the show right after he won last term, it was beyond ridiculous. And he called me Chris a number of times, something I had never experienced before in my life, where he kept thinking he was talking to Chris. And his slate of issues was just completely off the wall. I just recommend people listen to that. It was, if he was trying to pull a joke on me, it wouldn't have gone any differently. So not someone who you would think would be worthy of the United States House of Representatives, but then again, we have so many goofballs in there. Then it's hard to get too worked up over a goofball or two on our side when there's so many goofballs on the other side of the aisle. So someone who has endured a number of scandals, a lot of them after he had said that there's drug-fueled orgies that are going on in Washington, D.C., which they've been rumored to be that over and over again for a long time. I never heard anyone with direct knowledge of them when I was living inside of D.C. and now, you know, I'm on the periphery. It does feel like that there's some truth to it. I never knew for sure, but he started talking about it. And then after that, all of this flood of opposition research came out about his extracurricular activities, should we say. But he was a reliable vote on the MAGA side of the aisle, so I guess that could potentially be a loss. But he had a big target on his back, because he drew a lot of media attention and did not do a lot to protect himself and his career. I'll tell you that. And it started with the first time he's on our show. And like, he was just very utterly disrespectful. He had no idea where he was. I have no idea where he did not know where he was when he was on our show. And any of you who are remembering that interview, I'm sure chuckling, because I was almost laughing along with him. But he literally had no idea where he was the one time he was on the show. So we didn't cover it a lot at Breitbart, because I know some of you are fans of his, probably because he is a reliable MAGA guy. But it is over. Chuck Edwards has beaten him in the primary by a margin of about 1,300 votes, which is tantamount to 1.5%. So Chuck Edwards will be likely the Republican who will take over the 11th district. We have a ton of other rundowns on the front page at Breitbart News right now, if you care to if you care to check it out. Sherry Beasley will be the Democrat nominee for Senate. She's going to face Ted Budd. A lot of tough talk from the Oz campaign. Kathy Barnett saying we put up a good fight. That's true. She did. So all the everything you need to know on the front page of Breitbart News will give you all the updates. Matt Boyle did an amazing job of keeping track of everything and all the various races on the front page at our website. And check it out. And if you have any thoughts, any surprises, then let me know. And it'll be interesting to see where things go from here. Okay, other things that are going on. Joe Biden spoke yesterday, and he spoke about the in Buffalo about the shooting that took place, and the President Unity, who declared before he was coming into the White House that his number one goal, aside from shutting down the coronavirus and getting the economy roaring, was to unify the country. And he took one lunatic teenager psychopath who should have been on the radar of law enforcement and yet wasn't, who shot up a supermarket, as representative of half of the country he is supposed to govern. He is so bubbled and he is so partisan that he thought that this was the best approach. He suggested democracy in danger. Democracy is in danger in this country. And why is that? Because of right-wing talkers. Right-wing talkers. People like me. That's why we've got people shooting up markets, I guess. A ridiculous, insulting, and I think falling on deaf ears, as I mentioned on yesterday's show. I don't think anyone really believes President Big Joey at this point. He connected the Buffalo mass shooting to January the 6th. Nice. Also a nice preview of what you've got in store, those of you who are out in Pennsylvania in the governor race. Because Mastriano was there on January the 6th and has been a stop the steal guy. So you guys will have another 5.5 months of that. So enjoy. So we got some clips of Big Joey. Let's play some of them. Why don't we play? Why don't we play cut three? Let's do it.
Look, the American experiment in democracy is in a danger like it hasn't been in my lifetime.
In a danger.
Nice. It's in danger this hour. Hate this and fear are being given too much oxygen by those who pretend to love America, but who don't understand America. To confront the ideology of hate requires caring about all people, not making distinctions. Reverend, the scripture is seeing that we're all part of the divine. Love thy neighbor as thyself. That's the America I know, that Jill knows. And most deserve the most, we're the most multiracial, most dynamic nation in the history of the world. Now's the time for the people of all races, from every background, to speak up as a majority in America and reject white supremacy.
Wow, that is pretty remarkable. Good stuff. I feel so unified, don't you guys? That we are in a danger at this hour. I'm not sure about next hour, but at this hour. And why is it? Because the ideology of hatred. That's what's a big threat. What is ideology of hatred stuff? He's trying to create a tribal divide. He looked incredibly disheveled. I mean, he's looking skeletal, as I've noted. His hair plugs are in a very wispy mode right now. Look, it's I've got hair that doesn't always cooperate. I understand it. And people who get hair plugs, there's a variety of success rates with it, as Joe Biden has. But he looked like he couldn't get them under control. Couldn't get the plugs under control. And it was distracting in a moment where he's supposed to unify the country. And I'm trying to hear about what he's got to say. And I'm just watching his hair fly wildly all over the screen. I'll tell you, the guy wears a mean suit. This is one where I should say something nice about Big Joey. I was on the Babylon Bee podcast about 6 weeks ago, and they asked me to say something nice about President Big Guy. And I said that he originated the corn pop video. I could have said he wears a mean suit. The guy does. He's meticulously tailored. And his sartorial talents are known far and wide. But that said, he was a, his hair, I don't know what to say about it. It was all over the map. All over the map. But did you know that all of us who don't agree exactly with Joe Biden are all about an ideology of hatred? Is that what I bring on this show? Is that really what Tucker Carlson brings on his show on Fox? Is that what the, you know, Gutfeld and The Five? The Five's the most popular show now on Fox. Jesse Waters and Judge Jeanine. I mean, it's a joke, right? He's joking around. He's not joking, though. He means it. He thinks this is going to make progress. And this is why I mentioned on yesterday's show how a lot of these proclamations are just falling on deaf ears. I don't know if the country cares at all. Let's hear some more. We got some more Big Joey. Let's play Cup 4. Go.
We have to refuse to live in a country where black people going about a weekly grocery shopping can be gunned down by weapons of war deployed in a racist cause. We have to refuse to live in a country where fear and lies are packaged for power and for profit.
For profit. Who's making money off of some lone wolf monster racist shooting up a grocery store? Who's profiting off of this? There's only one group that's profiting off of it. That's the left-wing media. Because they talk about it a lot. People tune in and they make money. So it's incredibly dishonest. And you don't hear me rolling in the show saying, you know what? It's that left-wing media. They're the ones who are responsible 100%. A hundo P. A hundo P. It's ridiculous. Even though they do like to foment these things. And it's very clear the more we cover mass shootings, the more that they occur. And the more that they occur, the more money the left-wing media makes because their ratings go up. Because they cover it nonstop. And that becomes their programming. And they enjoy it in a pornographic sense. But I don't blame them when there's a mass shooting. I blame the monsters who do the shooting. And occasionally, if they slip through the cracks with law enforcement, that's relevant too. But what he's trying to do is he's trying to put this one racist teenager who avoided law enforcement for some reason, trying to put this individual on all of us. And as I mentioned on yesterday's show, I don't know what really the big conclusions are other than it would be great if law enforcement did a better job keeping an eye on the actual violent threats to our country and spent less time working on the people who disagree with them ideologically, as we've learned via Merrick Garland, our attorney general, that a lot of our law enforcement is dedicated to trying to shut down the speech of people who are law-abiding, nonviolent Americans. We should drop that, maybe even scale back, I wouldn't say scale back, but maybe, consider it, some of the foreign threats and focus on some of the domestic threats, physically. Though I don't necessarily recommend that because I think we can walk and chew gum at the same time. But if it's such a big problem, Big Joey, you just put more resources on making sure there's not as much domestic, actually like violent people. But he's not going to do that. He makes it all seem like the problem is with, you know, what people are listening to on radio and TV. And that's what's causing this stuff. It's of course not true. But it's sort of embarrassing at this point, isn't it? Do you think he's convinced his soul, or has he just extended a news cycle a little bit, which is what they live to do? You know, there's UFO hearings that are going on in Washington right now. And these UFO hearings are going to report what? Nothing concrete. And stuff that even the people who I know are sort of UFO hunters in my life in the news business, even they're kind of rolling their eyes a little bit at it. They're not even suggesting they're really aliens, but they could be from foreign countries, which poses a national security threat. And there's one encounter where some army vets were told to stay quiet about it. But who's to say that's aliens or not? What is it supposed to do? It's supposed to mean that we spend more of our time talking about that versus talking about other things that are direct threats to our country. That is the goal. All right. Other things that are going on. A baby formula shortage is still probably the biggest thing going and is worth daily updates. Nancy Pelosi addressed it. We've got a clip of that. Let's see how she did. Let's play cut seven. Go ahead there, Haley.
As a mother of five, grandmother of nine, a long time ago for me, I can still hear a baby cry. My baby is hungry. A mother should not, a parent, dad, mom, grandparents, whomever, caregiver should not have to hear a baby cry without being able to fulfill the need, to anticipate the need.
And the anticipation is big. It's definitely a big thing going on in my household. Whenever there is, wherever we're on the edge of the baby getting hungry, you want to start getting that bottle prepared. Now imagine that the baby's been hungry for a very long time because we couldn't get our act together to get formula ready because everyone fell asleep at the switch, despite warnings from Republicans and Democrats alike months ago that this could be an issue. So I don't necessarily see the confidence that this there's progress being made in this regard because the White House is focused on other stuff. It seems like there are some deals being made with Abbott Laboratories, famous for the coronavirus tests, who is responsible for a lot of the production of baby formulas to indicate so the production will ramp up. But I don't know the timeline on when this will be resolved. And it could be months. So that is Pelosi feeling our pain at this point instead of getting ahead of things is noteworthy and not great. All right, I'll offset this with some positive news. Comes out of the state of Florida. This will shock none of you. Ron DeSantis signs a measure outlawing protests outside of Floridians' homes. I immediately texted Mrs. Dr. Marlowe about this fact because it just makes Florida so appealing. It just really does, especially when you're in a career like mine where, you know, Antifa published where I address where my children sleep online. And I've got it easy. I mean, imagine being a Supreme Court justice. You know, I've had to jump through hoops, try to keep my, you know, where my family lives, at least reasonably secret. Of course, if you, anyone's capable of figuring out where anyone lives at this point due to private investigators and stuff. But that's pretty cool stuff. Florida's done. And such a no-brainer. Can't protest outside of people's private homes. In this age, and they're always forward-thinking. This is where DeSantis just gets immeasurable amounts of credit. He's looking ahead. He's not looking at what other people are doing, what's on their agenda. He's looking at an agenda that he's trying to set. And the agenda he's trying to set is that is unique relative to the rest of the country. So there's something that is a positive. Other things that are out there, tax filings reveal Black Lives Matter co-founder Patrice Cullors is a living lavish life. Spend a lot of money on charity. She spent a lot on houses. She received, according to the Daily Mail, $840,000 of donated funds. Were paid to a company by Damon Turner, who is the father of Patrice Cullors' child. And this was in order to help produce live events, allegedly. Her brother got a big chunk of money, close to $1 million for security. It's all a big racket. It's they all are funneling money to family members. That's what Black Lives Matter did. It wasn't about Black lives, never was. Black lives are no better than when Black Lives Matter got more prominent. It's about moving money around to family members, buying houses, buying real estate. And this still is a story that is mostly relegated to conservative media. Why is that? You can answer yourself. Other things going on, Joe Biden has released 118,000 border crossers into the U.S. in April, which exceeds the population of Joe Biden's own hometown. So Scranton, Pennsylvania has a population of 77,000, and we released 118,000 border crossers into the U.S. just last month. So, and those are just the people we released, the people who we're aware are here illegally, and we let them free into our country. Again, we could do 3 hours a day every day, and it wouldn't be enough on this topic. Positive news on the immigration front: in a 5-4 ruling, a illegal alien who sought to evade deportation from the U.S. was appealing to the U.S. Supreme Court, and his deportation was affirmed. Pankaj Kumar Patel, an illegal alien from India who arrived in the U.S. with his wife in the 90s, applied for discretionary adjustments of status with the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, USCIS, in 2007, and the adjustment of status would have rewarded Patel and his wife with green cards, and USCIS denied Patel's application, having found that he previously falsely claimed to be an American citizen on a Georgia driver's license application. When the federal government, John Binder writes at Breitbart, sought to deport Patel and his wife years later, he again applied for adjustment of status and argued before a federal immigration judge that he accidentally checked the citizen box on the Georgia driver's license application. The judge denied Patel's effort to avoid deportation and ordered him and his wife removed from the U.S. When Patel appealed the decision to the Board of Immigration Appeals, they dismissed the case. And this set forward a huge chain of events, and in the end, in a 5-4 ruling, he has been rejected. But again, we take all this time, take 20 years on this thing. 20 years. It's also interesting that Gorsuch sides with liberals in some of this, because Gorsuch really is a true libertarian on the court. And incredibly tall. It's just, you know, I'm making observations here. Gorsuch is tall and libertarian. Here's a positive one. Disney's Hulu. Hulu is a combination of Disney and NBC. Has axed a Hillary Clinton series called Rodham after 2 years of development. So, just like the voters. Just like the voters in 2008, 2016. Hulu, which is a Disney-NBC joint, has axed plans for a dramatic series about Hillary Clinton. They've been working over a very long time. It was supposed to star Claire Danes and Dakota Fanning. And the show is not going to proceed, which is a big surprise to everyone who's paid attention to it. Hulu had put out a 4-part documentary called Hillary in 2020, which featured sit-downs with the, I'm sure, 2024 presidential candidate. Unless Big Joey somehow clears the field. I'm not saying she's not the front runner. Still might be. Last one before we get to the phones. Elon Musk says he's a Republican now, which I guess is good. And again, I think he's mostly just manipulating the media. But if he does get a little bit red-pilled in the process of doing his performance art, I'm fine with it. But his Twitter deal is on hold because Twitter is being accused of lying about how many bots are on their platform. They said it was less than 5%. There's no way that's true. I would guess it's between a quarter and a third, maybe it's even a half of the alleged accounts on Twitter are false and they're lying about it. So, which gives Musk an out. And, you know, Donald Trump and others had predicted he's not actually going to go through with the sale anyway. That was definitely on our mind at Breitbart at the beginning of this saga, that perhaps he was not going to actually go forward with the sale, but it looks like he's mostly serious enough at this point. I still think it'll probably go through, but, you know, there's a lot of room for him to drop it. It's not a done deal, and he certainly can get a better price at this point because he's being lied to quite a bit. And Project Veritas put out a video, James O'Keefe's group, a sting catching Twitter engineers, proudly admitting bias and dissing Elon Musk. All of this is stuff that we know to be true, but it's still, I guess, somewhat refreshing to hear it come from the horse's mouth, because it reminds people in our lives who are, for whatever reason, resistant to the obvious reports from the media, places like Breitbart, that Twitter is a not honest place. One thing it does, though, it does foster a lot of hate. A popular commentator and philosopher, psychologist Jordan Peterson says he's quit Twitter after the platform has become dangerously insane, where you got a lot of woke vitriol. I mentioned a fair bit on yesterday's show the Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue, which just gets more bizarre every year. Yeah, this year's edition features 74-year-old Mae Musk, Elon Musk's mom, for whatever reason, on the cover. Also, a plus-sized model named Yumi Nu, who is nice-looking, though, of course, doesn't embody traditional elements of, you know, modern views on Western beauty because she's plus-sized. Though, I mean, good-looking person, certainly. But Peterson tweeted that, sorry, not beautiful, and no amount of authoritarian tolerance is going to change that. Perhaps a bit extreme, but he got a completely torched online for having this reasonable viewpoint. A viewpoint I don't necessarily agree with, but one that is certainly reasonable to have. And just completely torched online. Tens of thousands of negative comments. And he says the platform's dangerously insane. He quit. It's partially why that I don't do a lot of tweeting. It's just all, it's a cesspool of hatred. It's what it is. And I don't know if Musk is going to fix that. But if he's going to try, that's fine. I hope he does. And I hope he succeeds. But it is a, that is what happens. You voice an opinion that's reasonable that other people disagree with. And then you spend the next day or two completely insecure, because you've tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of people writing you about what a horrible person you are. That's the nature of it. Last one. The USA is suing Steve Wynn, who, because he needs to register as a Chinese agent. It's reporting Reuters. Steve Wynn is a Republican establishment guy, and he is famous for Wynn Resorts, and he apparently needs to register as an agent of China. I haven't looked into it deeply, but I'm sure Wynn is deep ties to China's tourism industry. And he's a casino mogul. And his hotels are exemplary. But he's a Republican establishment guy. He's joined at the hip with Karl Rove, as far as I can tell. So I don't think he shares my politics. But especially in the gambling world, I think Macau, however you pronounce it in China, is actually bigger than Vegas now for world gambling. And the Department of Justice said that, based off of a 2017 investigation, that he had contacted then-President Trump and members of the administration to convey China's request to cancel a visa and remove a Chinese business person who had sought political asylum in the United States, and Wynn was arguing on this person's behalf, which, again, which is under the Foreign Agents Registration Act, is apparently some sort of a violation. So maybe they're just harassing a guy who cuts a lot of checks to Republicans, but still compelling and interesting. And a Republican establishment bigwig in the hot seat for being too close to China. As noted, Rand Paul is my guest today and someone who has a lot of well thought through and crisp answers to questions. He's got a clear ideology. He's got a clear constitutional background, and he also does something with his life. He's a medical doctor, so he's got the experience as well. So always good when he's on the broadcast, and not the easiest booking. So good job, producers, getting the senator on the broadcast. Let's hear the interview. Senator Rand Paul's on the line with me, a senator from Kentucky, and won yesterday his primary race, which was a blowout, which was to be expected. Senator, congratulations, and thanks for coming back on the show. And it's apropos because we were talking about how patently absurd our efforts have been to send untold amounts of money to Ukraine, which I have no evidence that we're going to keep an eye on it, where it's going to go, whether or not it's going to be used productively. And you did a yeoman's job trying to hold it up as best you can. Can you tell us what's going on here, and do we have any accountability for where this money's going to go?
Well, I think it's important to know that we really don't have any money to send. I mean, we have to borrow the money from Amen. China to send it to Ukraine. And I think most people kind of get that, and many Republicans will say that and understand it when it is a new social program. But if it's military aid to a country, they're like, well, we can borrow that. That's a justified borrowing. But the problem is that it all leads to inflation. So it kind of hurts the Republican argument that, you know, Biden's debt and Biden's spending has caused inflation, except for when it's bipartisan spending, and then that doesn't really yeah. count. But in the last month, Republicans added over $100 billion in new debt with Democrats in providing direct subsidies to semiconductor companies, and also by increasing the National Science Foundation, one of the most wasteful organizations in Washington. It's been condemned since the time of William Proxmire. Whenever I list these outrageous sort of studies that make no sense, that people say, no way, we're spending money on that, that's the National Science Foundation. One example in the last year, $1.5 million spent studying people taking selfies of themselves smiling to determine whether or not, if you look at those pictures of yourself later, it will make you happier. So this is the kind of great stuff Republicans have put forward. Now the Republicans are supporting this, but guess what comes at the end of this week or next week? $48 billion to bail out restaurants for COVID. Now, I thought the COVID lockdown was over a year ago, except for maybe a few outlier Democrat states. And yet right. now you have Republicans wanting to push forward another $48 billion. So there needs to be someone up here who says, enough's enough. We don't have the money.
And you put forward that we at a minimum need to have an inspector general who can oversee how the funds are spent. And this was rejected by Republicans?
Yeah, we have an inspector general that has a track record, has a good track record of following wartime spending. His name's John Sopko. He's in the so-called SIGAR, Special Inspector General for Afghan Reconstruction. So he's been doing this for several years. He has a team. He writes an entire book talking about the waste that we've wasteful dollars spent in Afghanistan. So he could hit the ground running. They could start tomorrow looking at this money. Democrats and some of the Republicans said, oh, well, let's let Joe Biden appoint a new one, and in 6 months or 9 months, we'll come back and revisit this. And my point is, you know, by then, people, you know, every thief in the world who comes out to steal our money will have already stolen it by then. I had many Democrats and Republicans come up to me and say, oh, yeah, it's a great idea in the first, you know, couple of hours. And then Schumer comes over to me and says, oh, we hate this guy. We don't want him. You know, because we know he'll be ruthless and looking for waste. And it's like, really, I think that's what you want, is someone who is a zealous guardian of the taxpayer dollar to be an inspector general.
How do we lose sight of this? Because I have a lot of Republican legislators on my show, Senator, and they're almost all talk a good game now, but not all of them vote properly. We've had some of them on this week, people who will echo a lot of your rhetoric, and then they cast the wrong vote. They cast the vote to, borrow from China to pay for Ukraine.
I think they have a dualistic way of seeing this. They see spending is bad when it goes to social spending or a liberal welfare program, but then they see it's good as if it's a military, it's attached to it. And so this is what I tried to say in the presidential debate. It didn't necessarily carry a majority in the primary, but in 2016. But I would say that you can't be fiscally conservative if you're for unlimited military spending and for conserving social welfare spending. Because really the compromise that happens in Washington, this is the bipartisan consensus right now in Ukraine. Republican and Democrat leadership are exactly the same. So they get together. But in order to get this, it's guns and butter. So if you look at the $40 billion, there's a lot of guns, but in order to get the guns, they had to give a lot of butter. And so there's a lot of sort of social spending that's going to European countries and for food throughout the world, basically. And this is what happens in the budget every year. Like right now, we have record military budget. We spend more than the next eight countries combined, But in order to get that, we have to pay the Democrats off, and that is to have enormous social welfare spending. And so everything goes through the roof. And as a consequence, even before the COVID bailout, we were running about a $1 trillion deficit a year. And then in the last 2 years, we added an extra $5 trillion on top of the normal trillion. So that's where we are. And I think we're in danger of destroying our currency. This isn't an idle question. I think we're in danger of inflation getting much worse in the next 6 months because they're all petrified of a recession. So they're unwilling to allow interest rates to go up, which would probably cause a recession, but might crush the inflation.
Yeah, and I do think that that's going to be the big decision that's going to have to be made if we're even able to control it at this point. One of the criticisms that we're seeing from the establishment left is that if you equate a Ukraine spending to anything else, if you act as though it's coming out of a pot that could go elsewhere, then you're simply on the side of Putin. So anyone who's more concerned about our open border or gas prices or the shortage of baby formula is somehow doing Putin's bidding. That's literally the talking point. I don't think anyone in this audience feels that way, Senator, but I would love to hear your response to that.
There's a great quote from John Quincy Adams that many people who believe in a constitutional foreign policy quote, and he says, "We don't go abroad in search of monsters to destroy. It was for less intervention in European wars." But he also followed that up with a statement that wherever the standard of freedom and independence is unfurled, there will our hearts and our prayers and our benedictions be. And so you can be sympathetic. I'm incredibly sympathetic to the Ukraine. They have no sympathy for Putin. He's an aggressor. He's an autocrat in his home. I mean, I really have no sympathy at all. But at the same time, my first obligation, my oath of office is to the United States, and it's my judgment that it makes us weaker to borrow $40 billion more from China and other countries to send to Ukraine. So that's my judgment, makes us weaker. But also the Constitution doesn't give an explicit power to Congress to give money to other countries. So really, if you're a strict constitutionalist, an originalist, you look at the Constitution, it's like, where does it say that we can give grants of large sums of money to foreign countries? And where does it say we get involved in a war without declaring war? You know, the other day, Biden or one of his henchmen said we were at war. I think it was a Democrat congressman, Steny Hoyer, said we're at war. And it's like, wait a second, guys. I don't think we're at war. I don't think we've had any vote on going to war. But it doesn't mean we're not sympathetic with Ukraine. I think we could have sold them arms. I think we could have given them loans.
Same.
But what we've done is given away the farm, and I think it's making us weaker.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. That's why we like Senator Rand Paul, who will be heading back to the Senate for 6 more years, almost certainly, which is good news. And I want to ask you about another piece of rhetoric that's coming from the establishment media, which is somehow lumping everyone who is right of center in America, presumably you, presumably me, presumably the entire audience, with this one lone racist maniac who shot up a supermarket in Buffalo. And of course, we're going to be target guns as well as right-wing conservative rhetoric and thought. What's your reaction here?
I guess I'm always upset when I see left-wing politicians sort of trample on the memory of people who were just recently murdered in front of their families and go up there and start talking about how they're going to score political points and how they're going to have more gun control. Look, the kid bought the gun legally. And so we need to figure out a way to stop crazy people who have been already, involved with making threats to kill people from buying guns. Now, there has to be a proceeding. And this is one thing those of us on the right have said, is that you can take away gun rights from somebody if there's a court proceeding, if they get their day in court. So conservatives have not been against felons having their gun rights taken away. This boy, I think, committed a felony before this by making terroristic threats, and he needs to get a day in court, but somebody should have done something about it. In fact, this punk was sort of laughing that I can't believe I still can go legally buy a gun after I said I was going to commit mass murder. So we need to treat this stuff seriously. The Parkland shooter down in Florida, some people estimate he committed 17 felonies before he got to murdering the other student. And so, yes, we have to do something about it. And the tragedy of this is almost every domestic terrorism that we've seen and many, many of the mass shootings that we've seen in our country, the commonality is they've all been seen by the FBI before or they've been seen by law enforcement before.
Yes, without, exactly.
Some kind of punishment. So we've got to do a better job. And I think those of us on the right should not sort of be insensitive that we need to figure out a way to prevent these shootings from happening.
Well, and that's exactly my follow-up, is New York had red flag laws. How was this missed? How was the FBI miss it? How did local law enforcement miss it? I mean, the same question as you bring up, it connects to Parkland, which should have been caught.
Yeah, they've got to do a better job, but immediately, see, the response in our country is always a knee-jerk response. Do we need to pass another law instead of why aren't we obeying the current laws?
Yes.
And so you're right. When you look at New York or California or Chicago, with some of the strictest gun control laws in the country, you find that they still have worse gun crime than any place else. Also, it's a truism that the vast majority of crimes are with illegally purchased guns, so the gun control isn't really working to stop criminals. But in this case, it's a very, very sad day for those families, and people
yes.
should show sympathy for the family instead of Biden going up there to exploit their memories. And so I think it's sad that he does this, but it's become routine.
Two more questions for Senator Rand Paul, Republican from Kentucky. One of them is, it does feel like young people are flocking to the conservative movement more than I've seen in my lifetime. Your dad, of course, Ron Paul, probably is the person who, maybe other than Ronald Reagan, inspired the most young conservatives of anyone in the last 50 years or so. Are you feeling that as well, Senator? Or do you feel like there's a youth movement in the conservative side of the aisle at this point?
You know, I think it's somewhat of the Elon Musk phenomenon, in the sense that, you know, Elon Musk said yesterday that he always really voted Democrat. He's probably a moderate, but he's going to vote Republican. Why? Because he feels like the left has embraced censorship. And so I think freedom of speech, you know, in many ways it's an abstraction, and it's something that idealists are for. I'm for it. But the thing is, young people are that way. Speech is something important to them. Taxes, maybe not so much, even the Second Amendment, but their speech is important. They have phones, they communicate with their friends, they transfer money online, they do all of these things, and I think they don't want a government that invades that sphere and regulates their speech and tries to regulate their thoughts and actions. So I think we can appeal to young people in opposing censorship. And, you know, I think Biden said yesterday, we need to start taking some names down. What does that mean? They're going to take names down of people they disagree with. Saying that the biggest misinformation, you know, the biggest killer of people in our country is misinformation. I mean, who are these people? But I think they've made themselves outliers. And one of the things that's really going to hurt them is because they've become such authoritarians on dictates that the mask mandate on planes, they still are suing in court and advocating that we should put the mask mandate back on. If you go to an airport and you look at all the smiling faces, guess what? 97% of travelers disagree with them. So they're barking up the wrong tree if they think they're going to put us back in masks and put us back into mandates and surround us with plexiglass and stickers. If they think they can do that again, they really are not witnessing what's going on with the American people. And I think the young people have been masked up in these schools. Eventually, there is going to be a rebellion saying, free my face, leave me the hell alone.
Sure. Senator Rand Paul, last one is, you and I have had virtually the same take on the coronavirus throughout. And I think the longtime listeners know that. But I want to get your thoughts on where we are right now. It seems like there's a lot of virus right now, not quite as much death. And are you afraid we're going to go back under lockdowns? Anything on the virus topic? You've been so sharp on this. You're a medical doctor. What are you concerned about anything right now? What are your thoughts?
The most important thing to know, and it isn't the numbers of tests, which are really irrelevant at this point, the number of people testing positive, completely irrelevant if they're asymptomatic. If you test 1,000 people randomly for immunity, what you find is somewhere between 95 and 98% of people have immunity, either from the vaccine or from the virus itself, or sometimes both. And so what we know is, if you've been infected, you're 55 times less likely to go to the hospital if you've had COVID previously. If you've been vaccinated, 20 times less. So there's enough immunity out there that the virus is no longer novel. This is an endemic virus. It is with us. But if we keep measuring the amount of people with it every day, we are going to endlessly be in this cycle. We're going to spend endless trillions of dollars getting tests. There's no reason in the world people without symptoms should be taking a test. We've never, ever in the medical world said, oh, I might have a disease. You know, I don't have any symptoms. You would have been laughed out of the doctor's office, and the doctor would have called you a malingerer if you showed up for a test with no symptoms. So, can I have a flu test? because, you know, I think I might get a flu tomorrow, or I met somebody who had the flu. Nobody ever did that. And so we've got to get away from that. And as long as we continue the hysteria, we're going to continue spending billions and billions on this.
Sure.
Schumer's lined up to get more money now. We've got to go back to some normalcy.
Senator Rand Paul, Republican from Kentucky, congrats again on the win yesterday, and we'll be speaking to you again.
Thanks.
That's all for today's show. Thanks to producer Haley and producer Greg Eben, as well as Robert Marlowe, who helps me pick topics, and all of you who spread the good news about Breitbart, picked up Breaking the News. All that matters a great deal. Thanks a lot, and we will talk to you tomorrow. Apologize.